I want another NBA chance. This time, I'll succeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Sunday's action in the NBA. We're going to be previewing the week ahead, week 8 in the NBA, and then also looking at the DFS action for Monday, as well as talking about some waiver wire players for you to keep an eye on. Michael Bolton, he can't wait.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it. Indeed, we will start where we always do on these shows, and that is, of course,
Monstrous Line of the Night.
I don't think anybody would have any argument with this one. Anthony Davis puts up one of the best Richie Bennos you'll ever see.
Two for two, two, two.
Yes, Davis played 37 minutes. He had 36 points, 19 rebounds, and 8 assists, but that Richie Benno as well. 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He was 14 of 19 from the field for 74%, and a perfect 6 of 6 from the free throw line. He has reestablished himself as the number one fantasy player, averaging 28 and 13 with 5 assists, 1.6 steals, and 2.7 blocks. Just, they're crazy numbers. You drafted him at number one. He is he's putting up number one numbers, so hey, no complaints anywhere for Davis, who at the start of the season, efficiency was down, and that is starting to come back up. 55% shooting over the last 2 weeks, and 86% from the line, numbers that were a little bit down to begin this season. But Tone Davis is crushing it at the moment, and back in his rightful position as the number one player in fantasy.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to Rashawn Holmes of the Phoenix Suns. Holmesy played 23 minutes in a game that DeAndre Ayton played only 25 minutes. Some foul trouble there for Ayton. Holmesy had some big numbers, 15 points, only the one rebound, but really, you know, I guess, complemented that with 3 steals and 4 blocks. Over the last 2 weeks, Rashawn Holmes is a top 100 fantasy player. He's getting 18 minutes a night, 11 points, 5 rebounds, but it's the 2 blocks, it's the 1.1 steals, and it's the 71% shooting from the field that's really giving him that value. And his value would be even higher if he wasn't a 56% free throw shooter. He isn't a 56% free throw shooter through his career. His last 3 seasons, 69, 70, and 66% from the line. So there is some significant room for improvement there from his free throws, but he's also not that level of a shot blocker or that level of a steals guy. He was at 1.4 blocks per 36 last year. He's at 3 this year. He was at 1 steal per 36. He's at 1.8. So those numbers are significantly increased from Holmes. He's also taken a bit of a step up in his rebounding rate, which is something that seems relatively sustainable. So if you're looking for some weird big man-y type stats with good field goal percentage, the blocks and steals, they're coming in pretty good numbers. You could look at Holmes as a guy who's an 18-minute per night sort of a player, but of course, I do fear there is going to be some level of regression with these defensive numbers. He's never shown an aptitude to do it at this sort of a level. So there is room for him to drop off, but I do like him on a per-minute basis. I would hope, you know, 22, 23 would be what we'd be really looking for him to be a must-roster player, but he's absolutely worth taking a gamble on and seeing whether these defensive stats can keep up, because that's Nerlens Noel-type territory, which we know if Nerlens was getting 20 minutes a night, he would be pretty close to being a pretty close to being a 12-team player, and Holmes is filling that role just at the moment. The deep leaguer of the night goes to Mo Harkless of the Portland Trailblazers. With Evan Turner out, Harkless played a significant role. So there's a couple of things in play here. Actually, I'll give you stats first. 34 minutes, 8 points, 2 triples, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 3 blocks. Only took the 5 shots, hit 3 of them, but it's those defensive numbers, which is really why we like Harkless, that steals and blocks, that triple one type of a guy. There's a couple of things in play here. Is it that his knee injury is fine now and he can play these big minutes? Or was it fine all along and he just wasn't getting the playing time because Evan Turner was in there? So we don't actually know how this is going to play out for Harkless. Is he going to be the guy who plays, you know, high 20s in minutes when Turner is healthy, or has Turner played that well in that role that we're going to see Harkless continually in that, you know, low 20s, high teens type of a range, even though he can push it further. So now we know that he can push it further in the minutes. When Turner's back is going to be the big question as to what happens for Harkless's value moving forward. I wouldn't say he's a significantly high upside sort of a player. He can help in those defensive numbers and be a triple one sort of a guy, but never going to be high usage or get lots of assists or be a high rebound guy. It's all about steals and blocks for Harkless. We're really going to get that answer the next time that Turner's back as to, you know, what his role is going to be as we move forward. Was he just pressed into this extra action with Turner out? That's going to be the big question. A big question for him. Interestingly, though, in this game with Turner out, Jake Layman didn't play at all. So Harkless was taking that larger role there when they could have gone to Layman to help fill in some of that gap. So there is some interest there in Harkless, but I'm not falling all over myself to go and grab him in any sort of 12 team format. I have to introduce you guys to a new sponsor of this show. It comes directly from a listener to this show. Zach has been listening to this podcast, and he is bringing his company direct to you guys, and I can't recommend it enough. He sent me a couple of samples, and the company is Pure Tanica. That's Puretanica. You can go and buy. We'll give you the product details in a sec, but what it is, he sells shampoos and conditioners. So he sent me a bottle of his shampoo, a bottle of his conditioner, and I used it. It was fantastic. It's got this great cooling, minty sort of a smell. I love the smell of mint in general, but in hair products as well. It really does cool down your scalp. And if you're someone who does suffer from an itchy scalp, which I do quite often, you know, having that sort of cooling, minty sensation on your scalp is fantastic. And that's exactly what the products over at Pure Tanica, you know, will bring to you. It's a great way to start off your day, have that invigorating, you know, just waking up feeling in the shower, or just to help ease the tensions throughout the day. Grit and grime from city living can build up in your hair, and you don't really notice it, but something like the Pure Tanica shampoos and conditioners with their mintiness and their, you know, really, you know, its gentleness on your scalp can help get that out and help really, I guess, enliven you for the rest of the day. With Pure Tanica, you will feel and see a difference with your hair. It's fantastic for dry scalps. It helps in dandruff as well. And it can also help with thinning hair, which many men my age can sympathize with. Myself, you know, always everyone this age starts to get a little bit happening there. And the products from Pure Tanica can really help you there as well. You can get Pure Tanica from Amazon.com, or you can also go to PureTanica.com and get free US shipping by using the promo code basketball. So that is Pure Tanica, PureTanica, PureTanica.com, and use the promo code basketball to get free shipping. So go and check those guys out. All right, let's go on to the next award.
Young Gun of the Night.
It is the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma of the Los Angeles Lakers. Only 29 minutes for Kuz in the blowout win against the Phoenix Suns. He had 23-8 with 3 triples, 3 assists, a steal and a block, and shot 8 of 14 from the field. Didn't miss a free throw either. His form over the last few games has been pretty impressive. His last 5 games have given you 21, 21, 11, 15, and 23 points. He had a double-double in there as well. He's got multiple assists in all of those games. He's always going to lack in defensive stats, but it's some strong performances from Kuzma, who did struggle to begin this season. Over the last 2 weeks, he's crept back inside the top 100. I would still be looking at him as a sell-high player. I think when someone like Rajon Rondo returns, even though they're playing completely different positions, what it does is it takes guys like Brandon Ingram away from the point guard position and pushes them up the pecking order a little bit, up the positional pecking order anyway, and that might have an impact on Kuzma. Now, I wouldn't be selling him for any sort of run-of-the-mill top 100 guy. You might be able to find someone that believes in him as a top 75 guy rest of season. I don't, but you might be able to find that guy. And that's the sort of sell high I'd be looking to do for the future MVP here. Some strong performances. Again, realistically, more just a points and threes type of a guy. Going to lack in the defensive numbers. And I think that holds him back. But I'd be really, after these, you know, strong string of games from Kuzma, I'd be inquiring to see if I can get anything of value back in any sort of deal. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night goes to Nicola Batum of the Charlotte Hornets in a game that Cody Zeller was out and then Marvin Williams had to leave in the second quarter due to a sprained shoulder. Batum played only 14 minutes. He had 2 points with 3 rebounds and is struggling at the moment. He has dropped now to being outside the top 100 and he is outside the top 150 over the last month. Now, I have been an unabashed Batum apologist for many seasons and he goes through these slumps and he invariably has been able to turn them back around. At the moment, I'm not so sure. And if I'm losing confidence in Nick Batum, then I think we're almost at the back end of where we should feel. Now, in 10-team leagues, I think he can kick his ass out of there. In 12-team leagues, I'm not exactly sure, but one thing I am certain of is that those high assist numbers, which really buoyed his rankings over the past couple of seasons, they're gone and they're not coming back. So that drops a ton of his upside value, in my opinion. And if there's a hot free agent available on the wire, whether that be someone like Markieff Morris or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, for example, I would switch those guys, no questions asked. If Jeremy Lamb is for some reason floating around, I would make that switch. I'd even consider Miles Bridges, who I think is a realistic chance of perhaps even taking this position away from Batum at some point this season. Borrego's been pretty fluid with his rotations. We saw Bridges start for Marvin Williams in the second half today and played pretty well. And if you want to take an upside gamble, I wouldn't be chastising you for making that move of dropping Batum for Bridges. Now, you're not dropping him for anybody. You're not dropping him for Dante Cunningham or Marco Bellinelli or any bullshit move like that. You want to have a real balance as to what you're considering here with Batum, but the signs aren't great. The efficiency is actually up. He was a 42% guy last season, 40 last season. He's at 46, so the shooting's there, but the usage is well down, 14% as opposed to 18 last season. Assists have gone from 5.5 to 3.5, and that's impacting what he's doing, and we're seeing over the last month under 28 minutes per night. These are all really concerning things, not getting to the free throw line anymore. There are huge red flags here with Batum, and I think, again, if he is on your team, you need to be considering him as probably your 12th or 13th best player on your roster, which makes him a drop category guy. And again, if there's a hot free agent out there, I think you do have to be considering that. And again, I say that as one of the biggest Nick Batum apologists who probably exists in the fantasy sphere. Best net ratings of the day, the plus-minus goats. The Moose, Mike Muscala, was the plus-minus goat. He had the best net rating of the day, plus 82.9. He started the game with baby neck Wilson Chandler injured. He did what he needed to do in a solid win for the Sixers against the Grizzlies, while the worst net rating went to someone in that same game from the Grizzlies, Omri Caspi, a negative 105.9. I think Caspi actually may be out of the rotation when Joakim Noah is ready to go. And I don't think we need to talk too much about Caspi. Muscala's got this 14-team league value, borderline 12 while Chandler is out, but a solid 14-team league sort of a player. And we did see that from him in today's game. If you guys want to be like Zach and Pure Tanaka and have your show advertised on this podcast, you can do it. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite shows. And this podcast, 98% male audience, higher educated and higher earning than your traditional media audiences. So if that appeals to your company, hit me up. Email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com and you can get your company announced over these airways and get yourself a whole brand new customer base. Let's talk some injury news. Dwight Howard, we know that he is out for the foreseeable future. We're talking months here with his injury. I've already referenced Markieff Morris. He is the clear ad there. Thomas Bryant is the guy in deeper leagues that you want to pay attention to. The injury to Howard means that you can drop him in nearly every format, even in keeper dynasty leagues. I really worry about Dwight's future in this NBA, to be honest, if this persistent back/ass issue that he's dealing with. I think we do have to really be worried about what he's going to be as we move forward. So he can be dropped. Markieff can be added. Oubre gets a little bit of a bump, as does Tomas Satoransky for the Wizards, who started in place of Oubre last game. So some value there with the old Washington Wizards. Joakim Noah, I mentioned him already, signed with the Memphis Grizzlies. He likely does take Caspi's minutes and be maybe a 20-team league backup center type of a player. Andre Robertson had a setback with his knee injury, so he's out for at least another 6 weeks. Not impacting too much, but for deeper leagues, guys like MC Hamadou Diallo and Alex Abrines, they get a bit of more a sustained boost, as with Dennis Schroeder. Well, Victor Oladipo is out indefinitely. I know that term scares everybody, but yeah, the late follow-up report from Wojnarowski, I don't know why I just called him Wojnarowski. It's either Woj or Adrian Wojnarowski. Said that he is still, you know, getting work in and just getting back into game shape, and it's not a long-term situation. We've seen Darren Collison push his value up, Corey Joseph push his value up, Bojan Bogdanovic and Tyreke Evans. All of those guys have 12-team league, well, at least borderline 12-team for Corey Joseph and Tyreke Evans in the absence of Oladipo. Then there's a chance when Oladipo returns, all four of those guys drop outside the top 100, top 120, rendering them more waiver wire guys. But, you know, short-term stuff, there in Indiana. Etuan Moore suffered a leg injury. He missed today's game. Probably a chance, I say, to miss Monday's game. I don't think he's a 12-team league guy anymore. Wes Johnson started in his place, did nothing, of course. Solomon Hill got the biggest bump in playing time, while Cody Zeller missed today's game for the Hornets. We had Bill Hernangómez start the first half, and Bismack Biyombo start the second half, but it was Frank Kaminsky who really took the largest role on for this Hornets team, and he could be a 16, maybe even 14-team league streamer as long as Zeller remains sidelined. A couple other injuries from today. Devin Booker suffered another hamstring injury. I would have to assume that Booker is going to miss time. The Suns are talking as if he is going to miss time. They're just saying we don't know how long it's going to be. No idea what the time frame is. I would guess 2 to 3 weeks would be my early estimation here for Booker. That's going to increase the value of Ali Okobo, of McCall Bridges, and Josh Jackson. I think all of those are viable 12-team league adds. I would prioritize them as Okobo number one, even though he was a turd today. And then I'd look at Bridges and Jackson. It's pretty equivalent in those players. Maybe you want... It's hard to get a full judge because we also had TJ Warren out of today's Suns game, but they're the three guys who are going to get that boost. Luka Doncic sat out today's game with a hip injury for the Mavericks. It doesn't appear to be anything long-term, which is good. Marvin Williams left today's game with a shoulder injury. I expect this one to cost him games. That means Miles Bridges is absolutely on your radar, even for 12-team formats, while Rodney Magruder sprained his ankle and wasn't able to return for the Miami Heat. He is not a 10 or a 12-team league guy anymore, and this should just be that final push that you need to remove him from your roster to add, maybe it's Miles Bridges. With Magruder out, it does give a boost to the Duke, Wayne Ellington, to be a consistent three-point threat there for you. A few extra minutes went to Justice Winslow in today's game as well. I'd look more at Ellington than Winslow as a 12-team league player for as long as Magruder is sidelined, which again we don't know exactly how long that is going to be. We will have updates as soon as we hear, we'll have the updates. Let's get into these games now and talk about them in some more detail. The first game we take a look at. Where are we? We have got those Phoenix Suns taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. This was a blowout. The Lakers were 120. The Suns 96. Trevor Ariza with a strong game. Didn't mention him before. He's a 12-team league ad with Booker out. 13-9-3 with 4 steals for Booker, while Jackson had 13-6-3 with 2 steals and Bridges. This is more in line with what I expected McCall to do. 31 minutes, 11 points, 4 rebounds, 2 threes, 2 steals. That's back-end valuable for 12-team leagues, and if Booker misses, I think we can see more of that. Okobo struggled. He played 30 minutes, only 3 points, but 1 of 9 shooting. Okay, so you get that to 4 of 9 shooting. That's an additional 3 points, maybe 7 points if one of those is a 3. That puts him at 10 points, 1 rebound, 4 assists with maybe 2 threes, and that's okay on a low volume, on not a great night for him. And I think that's more of a realistic expectation for someone like Ali Okobo, and I'd be looking to add him. Jamal Crawford played 17 minutes but struggled in his on-court stuff, while Troy Daniels for deeper leagues came in, hit 3 threes, and he could be getting some of that bench role with Booker likely sidelined. For the Lakers, we had LeBron James. 22-6-8, only needed 31 minutes from LeBron, while Lonzo Ball, only 7 points on 10 shots for Lonzo, but 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals. That's 9 steals for Lonzo in the last 2 games. Still a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. Mike Beasley got hot off the bench for 14 points. Well, not much else really happening. Another stinker from Ingram. KCP and Josh the Hitman Hart didn't do enough. And I think they're a little bit over-rostered. 46% for Hart, 38% for Caldwell Pope. I don't think either of those guys are 12-team league players. More 14-team league guys, while Lance Stephenson could only muster 10 minutes, and most of that was garbage time for Stephenson, as he's really seeming to fall out of favor here for the Lakers. The next game we take a look at, the New Orleans Pelicans beat the Charlotte Hornets 119-109. Talked about Davis already. Mirotić had 16 and 8, while Drew Holiday continued his strong run, 19, 4 and 8. Drew says, I love playing off ball, but still get you 10 assists per game. I only had 8 here, but that's pretty bloody close. And his efficiency has been outstanding. While Darius Miller, back from the dead, 13 points in 24 minutes for Darius. Wes Johnson, who I mentioned started for Etuan Moore, had 3 points in 15 minutes and not really an option, while Julius Randle is a bit of a turd from him, 13 and 9 in 21 minutes with some foul trouble. It does need to be noted. Timmy Frazier, a hot waiver wire pickup, 7 points in 38 minutes, but he is getting the assists, 9 assists in this one, so he's realistically just a stream option for assist if you don't need assist, if you're going to lose that category anyway. Or if you're so far ahead it doesn't matter, then he provides really little value for you, but that's what he's doing, and it's enough to be rostered in pretty much all leagues, but if it's going to work on your team depends, I guess, on how your team looks. On the Hornets side of things, Bridges played the 29 minutes, had 16 and 8 with 3 triples and 2 blocks. It's enough for me to get interested in him with Williams potentially out and Batum struggling. Jez Lamb had 11 and 6, while we had a Devontae Graham side. I like Graham for dynasty formats. Tony Parker might be out next season. Kemba Walker might be gone. Not saying that Graham's going to step in and start immediately, but I do think he's interesting. 8 points, 2 dribbles, and 2 steals for him, while Frank the Tank had 19 in his 25 minutes. Bill Hernangómez, productive, 11 and 8, but didn't start the second half. That went to Biyombo, who only played the 5 minutes. Kemba Walker sprained his ankle during this game, but returned, so I don't think there's anything to worry about. It wasn't his best night, 13, 3, and 5 on 5 of 16 shooting, as some of the shine is starting to come off Kemba. I don't think you should be looking at him as any sort of first-round fantasy player after his hot start to the season. I think that he will continue a little bit of a slide. Next up, we look at the Utah Jazz and the Miami Heat. Ravishing Rick Rubio. Not often you get a ravishing Rick with a 69% field goal.
Giggity!
They go together. 23, 5, and 6 with 2 triples in 36 minutes for the ravishing one, while Gobert had 12, 18, and 4 with 3 blocks. Rubio has pretty quietly upped his game over the last week or so, but I think the important thing here with the Jazz is not Rubio. It's the change that they made, with Jay Crowder starting again at power forward and Derek Favors coming off the bench. Favors has now played under 20 minutes in 2 consecutive games, 5.7 rebounds, but still bringing the defense, 2 steals and 2 blocks, which is basically what he was doing as a starter. He wasn't giving you 2 steals and 2 blocks, but he was giving you high steals and pretty strong block numbers. So if you were rostering him before, all you were getting out of it was those defensive numbers. And I think that this 34 minutes for Crowder, 18 minutes for Favors split is not necessarily going to be the way it goes every night. So I think if you had Favors before, you can hold him. But I do think we have to pay some more of attention to Crowder. 19, 6, and 2. He's still not a must-roster guy. He's a must-roster 14-team league guy. He's a back-end 12-team league player. Jingle and Joe had 11, 4, and 4 with 2 steals, while the Don struggled for 18 points on 24 shots with 5 rebounds and 3 assists. He looked like he'd turn the corner a little. While Kyle Korver went hot in his first game, 4 of 6 from 3, not so much here, 1 of 5 for just the 3 points in 17 minutes. He is a worse version of Wayne Ellington for fantasy and shouldn't be near your 12 or maybe even 14-team leagues. Hassan Whiteside had been terrible. We thought, was Bam Adebayo taking this role off him? Was he coming in and going to supplant Whiteside? Well, maybe not. 34 minutes for Whiteside, 23 and 20 with 1 steal and 3 blocks. The 1 of 6 from the line's atrocious, but you're pretty happy with that other production, while Adebayo only got the 14 minutes, 2 and 2 with a steal and a block. Now, I'm still okay with having Adebayo in a 12-team league, but the Heat are one of the most up and down teams in terms of how the rotation pans out. And it's not like we're just going to have Adebayo locked in as a 30-minute per game guy. I think you'll see him in 20s. Some nights will be 26, some nights will be 16. It just depends on what's going on with this team. The Duke had 4 triples for 12 points. Wayne Ellington, Dwayne Wade, another strong Dwayne Wade performance. 30 minutes, 15 points, 8 assists, a steal and a block. He is a significantly better player than he was last season, although he did just shoot 27% in this game. But his little run of form now makes you have to pay some attention in 12-team leagues, probably more of a 14 must-add. But in 12-teamers, I think you've got to pay a level of attention. While Kelly Olynyk had 16 and 8 with a steal and a block, a strong game from Olynyk, who really took up a lot of those Scooter Magruder minutes. So if Magruder's out, Kelly could be a guy to get somewhat of a boost. But again, he has been so inconsistent with his play and also with his playing time for us to really rely upon him in any sort of scenario. Next up, we look at the Memphis Grizzlies and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers win 103-95. My man, Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., only the 23 minutes for Jackson. Foul trouble again, but 17-3 with a steal and 3 blocks. This guy is going to be so bloody good. He is not on anyone's waiver wire, surely, but according to Yahoo, just rostered in 83% of leagues. 17% of leagues are not active. It's simple. It has to be that. He is a top 50 guy. He is a top 25, probably top 15 future fantasy player, maybe even higher. He is that good. Conley had 21-2-5, and Gasol had 12-4-3. It wasn't the best Gasol night. His efficiency has been through the roof this season, Mark, and it wasn't in this game. The rebounding was well down as well, so just chalk it up to a bit of a stinker from him. Interestingly, Wayne Seldon was available to play, but he didn't. Marshawn Brooks got all of those minutes, 21 minutes for Brooksy, with 12 points. Really just a deeper league points streamer. Well, Jermichael Green, the four steals are anomalous for him. 14-7 with two triples in 25 minutes. I think Joakim Noah could impact him somewhat. It takes some of the minutes from Jackson away from center, pushing Green down to fewer minutes at power forward. I think he's more of a 14-16 team league guy. I wouldn't be adding him in 12 teamers. Onto the Sixers, Embiid had 15-14 when Benny Simmons sprained his ankle early. Simmons ended with 19-12-6 with two steals in 37 minutes. He says he's fine. He was icing it after the game. Of course, ankles can swell up after the action, so it will be something we have to pay attention to. The Moose, Mike Muscala, he started for Baby Neck, had 8-7-5 in his 28 minutes, as I mentioned earlier, more of a 14-team league player. Well, Jim Butler, General Saunders, 21-3-2, not the greatest performance from the General in this game, still holding tight and think he can be maybe a top 25 player by the end of this season. Let's go on to the next one. We're talking the Portland Trailblazers and the San Antonio Spurs. Dame Lillard had 37 with 10 assists and 2 steals as the Spurs won 131-118. Yusuf Nurkic was strong, 16-8-5, and I have to talk about the Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Well, he was good. He was very good. 20 points, 4 triples, 9 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block on 7 of 9 shooting. Is there a more inconsistent and frustrating player in the NBA than the old Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu? He is the 113th ranked player this season. Over the last 3 games, he's the 33rd ranked player, averaging 15-6 with 2 triples on 68% shooting. He's just as likely to shoot 32% for the next week. He has borderline 12-team value. It's going to be up and down, but when it's up, it's up in a really, really big way. So add him, see what happens for the next 2 or 3. Drop him after that. McCollum had 24 points with very little else. In fact, didn't even get to the line once. And didn't see a huge amount else from many others of the Blazers. On to the Spurs. DeRozan had 36 after a slow start. While LaMarcus Aldridge, he hit his shots amazingly. 29-8, maybe it's a revenge game. 73% from the field for LaMarcus. Derek White, another big game. 33 minutes. Now, last game, you know, I tweeted out, this is what I like from Derek White, and many people, it was a blowout, mate. Of course, they got smashed and White was in. Well, in this game, they won. Okay, it was a blowout, but he still played 33 minutes. Again, the second consecutive game over 30 minutes, 10-5-6. I am intently watching him in 12-team leagues because, let's be honest, Dante Cunningham isn't good and Bryn Forbes also isn't good. So if White shows himself to be less not good than those guys, I think we're going to see more minutes moving forward. It's a real strong watch for me in a 12-teamer. I'd add him in 16-team leagues, no worries, no questions asked, and I'd consider it in 14-team leagues. But it's pointing in the right direction. The assists are being generated at a decent level. We haven't seen the defense come through, and he is a strong shot blocker. When that comes through, I told you I think we're going to see 12-team value from White at some point. I wouldn't be shocked if we have a 2-month period of top 70, maybe that's too aggressive, top 90 type value from White, but someone to really watch intently. Cunningham was out of the starting lineup in this game because he's not good. Davis Bertans moved in there, 10 points with 2 triples in 27 minutes, but he doesn't really move the needle, while Forbesy had 7 points in his 23 minutes. The next game we take a look at is the LA Clippers and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks get another victory, 114-110. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, had 21-6, while Lou Williams, who's been up and down this season, had 21 with 8 assists. Good to see him bounce back, while Avery Bradley has now strung 2 consecutive good games together. 12 points, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 triples for Bradles. Is it enough for me to get interested in 12-10 leagues? No. But is it enough in 16-10 leagues? Yes, he's rostered in 7% of Yahoo League 7. That means he is available in nearly every format. So all 16-teamers, I'd add Bradley, and I'd really consider it in 14-teamers as well. Pat Beverley got ejected. While the table, Montrezl Harrell, that free throw is killing you, 1 of 6. He had 23-10 with a steal and a block, though. Wasn't a great Shai Gilgeous-Alexander night, so if anyone drops him, you go and add him immediately. 8-1 with a steal and a block, while Toby Harris had 15-5-4. On to the Mavericks. Dennis Smith Jr. had his front teeth knocked out by Patrick Beverley. Still played 32 minutes. Only 9 points on a low usage, but 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. And more importantly, that's 2 consecutive games of 30-plus minutes as he returns from that wrist injury. If he is dropped, I add him in 12-team formats. Jordan had 16 and 23 with a steal and a block, while the pencil, Harrison Barnes, had 30 points, took him 28 shots to get there, with 9 rebounds and very little else. Wesley Matthews was also solid, 14-6-4, while Finney Smith started for Doncic, 10-7 with 2 steals in his 34 minutes. He's realistically just a very, very deep league player, and that's really about it for him. All right, let's go in and talk about the week ahead in the NBA. All right, this is week 8 coming up in the NBA for us to look at in terms of teams with their good and bad schedules. The Denver Nuggets have the best schedule for this week. 4 games. They take on the Raptors, the Magic, the Hornets, and the Hawks. So some good opportunities for those guys to put up big numbers, meaning guys like Monty Morris, Mason Plumlee, Juancho Hernangómez. They can all have a boost in their production this week. While the team with the worst schedule is the Philadelphia 76ers. Only 2 games, and they come against the Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons. You're still starting Joel Embiid in a weekly lineup most likely, but yeah, even General Saunders is a borderline 10-team start for this week, same as Ben Simmons, given that the majority of other teams play at least 3 games, with the Sixers only having the 2. Let's look at how the week breaks down. There are 8 teams with 4 games this week. There are 2 teams with 2 games, the Sixers and the Celtics, and then 20 teams with 3 games. When we're looking at how the schedule breaks down, you got 7 games Monday, 5 games Tuesday, 10 Wednesday, 3 Thursday, 10 Friday, 9 Saturday, and 4 Sunday. So we're looking to target Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday for our streaming targets. Unfortunately, there's no back-to-back on Monday and Tuesday to start the week. So in terms of how we're looking at streaming, we can't really utilize that 2-for-1 situation there. If we're going to go the Tuesday-Thursday pseudo back-to-back, we've got the Phoenix Suns and the Portland Trailblazers who have games on those 2 days, as do the Utah Jazz. And then then you got Thursday-Sunday as a pseudo back-to-back, where the New York Knicks have that pseudo back-to-back there. You've also got the Utah Jazz having that. The Utah Jazz got a pretty strong schedule this week in terms of streaming. It is important to notice, when you're looking at teams and go, if I look at the Cavs, they got 4 games this week. That's true. I'm going to stream Cavs guys. Only one of those 4 games comes on a day. It's same as the Denver Nuggets, actually. Only one of those games comes on a day where you likely utilize the waiver guy. So someone like Monty Morris, while it might be okay to lock him in on a weekly lineup where he can provide perhaps top 100 value in a daily changes lineup, you're probably not going to get him in for any more than your maximum 2 games for this week. So is that really worth it when you can find someone from the Knicks? Maybe it's Damo Dotson or Noah Vonleh, or maybe you try Alonzo Trier. And you might be able to get 3 games from those guys. They play 4 games, but 3 of those are quality games. So that's important. The Utah Jazz play 3 games, but all 3 of those are quality. So someone like Jay Crowder becomes a really strong ad because you can actually get 3 games out of him, whereas someone like Monty Morris or someone like someone in Cleveland, maybe it's Larry Nance, maybe you're looking at George Hill returning. You're not going to be able to use those guys because of when those games actually fall. The players to watch for this week who are going to have some interesting use in weekly leagues: Juancho Hernangómez, Jordan Clarkson, Alec Burks, Alan Crabb, the Blue Swimmer, Reggie Bullock, Timmy Frazier, Dan Green, and Alonzo Trier, along with Damo Dotson and Noah Vonleh of the New York Knicks. They're going to have some value for this week and potentially be able to be locked in into your weekly lineups. Hi guys, let's take a look at some potential waiver wire ads for this week coming and for the season ahead, some players who are going to be available. Now, all of these guys currently reside at under 70% rostered on Yahoo League, so we're going to talk about some guys here who I think you should be looking at. We'll start with Phoenix and Ali Okobo of the Phoenix Suns. He had that big game not that long ago once Isaiah Kanan was released, and then Devin Booker had a game missed due to a toe injury, and now today he's hurt his hamstring as well. Okobo is going to be up and down, as majority of rookies are. I think we're all well aware of that, but he is someone who has shown some flashes at times. He can hit threes, he can score, he can get some assists, he can get some steals, and I don't think that you should be leaving Okobo, who is only rostered in 18% of Yahoo leagues. I don't think that you should be leaving him on the waiver wire, especially considering this Devin Booker hamstring. We don't know how serious it's going to be, But it's his second hamstring for the season. And, yeah, I think we're going to be seeing some missed time. We may not. He may actually return. So I'm recording this at halftime in the Phoenix game. He may actually return during that game, but I'd be pretty highly skeptical. And even if Booker does return, I think that Okobo is going to have enough value. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, he's only played the two games, excluding today's game, and he is a top 60 player in that time. So someone to really pay attention to and to add in nearly all leagues. Jeremy Lin, someone who is available in a lot of leagues as well. He has been dealing with some ankle problems, but has put up strong numbers in only 22 minutes per night. Now, the shooting's been unsustainable, but the two threes, the four assists, the steal per game, that's useful for majority of leagues. He's available nearly everywhere, only 18% rostered in Yahoo. So he's a definite must-add for 14-team leagues and deeper. And I think even in 12-team leagues, in that 20 to 23-minute per game role, Lin can have enough value to be a rostered player in 12-team formats. He's back in, going to be back in action on Monday with that ankle injury, so that's a positive there. Just putting up consistent type numbers. Look back at what he did in Brooklyn and in Charlotte when he was playing 24, 25 minutes a night. He was a viable fantasy player. And I think we're going to get the same out of Jez again this season. Damo Dotson of the New York Knicks. Nobody can understand what the Knicks are doing rotation-wise. There are changes all over the place consistently in New York, but Dotson, who was starting and then was out of the rotation completely and now is back in and in a big way, averaging 27 minutes a night over the last three games, is someone to look at. Now, his recent performances are extraordinarily fluky. He's shooting 71% on threes over these last three games and 68% from the field overall. And that's giving him 18 points, which looks fantastic. And you look at his stats and you go, shit, 18 points per game. This is a bloke that I have to have. But of course, he's not going to be able to shoot that way. And his other numbers are a little disturbing. Only one assist over his last three games. Three rebounds. The 1.7 steals are very nice. The fact that he hasn't missed a free throw and gets to the line two times, so 6 for 6 over these last three games, has been impressive as well. But that shooting is going to come down, and it's not a realistic expectation to expect Dotson, who is, weirdly, a top 15 player over the last 2 weeks. He is not going to be able to maintain that because nobody is able to continue shooting at this level. But with Fizdale changing his mind as often as he changes his underwear, it's really hard to get a full grasp. But when something's happening and it's hot, we know that Fizdale is a reactionary rather than a pro-actionary coach, that when something's happening, he will ride with it. And you should be looking at Dotson as someone to roster at this point, with, you know, up and downs going to come and being someone that you can, you know, I guess, feel comfortable moving on from when the downs do come. His teammate Noah Vonleh is also someone to look at. Foul trouble is going to be an issue for Vonleh, but he is a top 60 player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 11 and 8.5. He is a real strong rebound guy if you need that. His field goal percentage is strong. He's blocking a lot of shots also. I'm not sure he's going to be able to necessarily keep up this level. His efficiency is way higher than it's ever been. 6 percentage points higher from the field, 12 percentage points higher from free throw from the free throw line, and hitting an additional 15 percentage points on his three-pointers. So really astonishing rises in those efficiency numbers. His block rate has doubled from what it has been for each of the last three seasons. So you could make arguments that some of his performances are fluky, but you could also make arguments, well, he's getting consistent playing time, so he's in more of a rhythm, especially for the blocks. I think that's part of it, and the free throws. I'm not sure that he's going to be a 45% three-point shooter, but he is also shooting 59% from three over the last seven games. He is someone that you can look at with the understanding that ups and downs will definitely come. Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics, also someone to take a look at for 12-team formats. He's been starting the last couple of games with Jaylen Brown out with a back injury. I think when Brown returns, Smart will remain as the starter. He's not going to be for everybody. He's not going to give you points, but what he will give you is assists. He will give you steals in big amounts, and he will give you three-pointers in solid numbers. And his free throws are actually really strong now, 83% over his last seven games. Doesn't get there that often, but Marcus Smart, over the last 2 weeks, not starting all those games, is the 60th ranked player in fantasy basketball. So that is going to be useful for a lot of people. He's rostered in 19% of leagues, so he is available in many different formats. So anything 14 or deeper, you've got to add Marcus Smart. And in 12-teamers, I think he's going to be able to maintain that starting job, and you should be looking at him pretty solidly. Kyle Anderson is on this list because he's only 63% rostered over on Yahoo. It was a terrible start to the season for Anderson, but he's picked it back up, averaging 8.5, 6-3 with a steal, with 1.3 blocks and shooting 57% from the field, back to being that sort of guy that we saw in San Antonio. Chandler Parsons is still bothered by that knee injury. We know that Anderson is locked in as a starting small forward and a 30-plus per game guy. He is key to what they're doing, and I think he feels a lot more comfortable, and I think you should feel really comfortable. He should be over 80% rostered in Yahoo leagues, and he's not, so that means he's available in 12-team formats, and you need to go and pounce on that. Another guy who needs to be rostered in a lot more leagues is Bogdan Bogdanovic of the Sacramento Kings, the 70th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He's just under my threshold here of 70% rostered, 69% in fact. He's averaging 30 minutes a night. I don't know why they continue to start Iman Shumpert over him, but it doesn't really matter because it enables Bogdanovic to be the backup point guard. He's getting big minutes. He's averaging 18 points. And the good thing is, and I talk about this all the time, he's averaging 18 points per game on 43% shooting. So he's not doing a Damo Dotson and hitting 135% of his shots. He's not doing it at astonishingly high levels. 42% from three, that's great. He was a 40% shooter last year. 95% from the line, he's a bloody good free throw shooter. Four assists, extraordinarily sustainable. 3.5 rebounds. So he is doing these numbers and he can just continue to be this top 70 guy. He is a must roster 12-team league guy and a must roster 10-team league guy, and he is available in leagues. So go and have a look at him. Timmy Frazier of the New Orleans Pelicans. He's not going to be as good as that one game where he started, but he is going to be an excellent source of assists, averaging over 7 assists in the 3 games since he re-entered the rotation. The shooting's going to come down 45% from the field. He's only getting 7 points, and the minutes are going to fluctuate. But those assist numbers, decent rebounder, okay steals, that makes him a viable player, at least until Alfred Payton returns, and then his value will disappear. But he's going to be up and down, but those assists should be a relative constant for Tim Frazier of the New Orleans Pelicans. Markieff Morris is someone who needs to be rostered in more leagues, 63% on Yahoo. He's a top 60 player over the last 2 weeks. Dwight Howard's gone for potentially the rest of the season. Markieff has really stepped up in his bench role, averaging 15.5 and 7.5 with 1.5 steals and 2 threes over the last 2 weeks, shooting 48 and 80 from the field and from the line. No reason any of that can't be sustainable. It's coming in only 29 minutes per game. He is a must roster 12-team league player, really working to his advantage, playing at the center position, and you need to make sure that he is not still sitting on your waiver wire. Another guy you could look at is Terrence Ross of the Orlando Magic. The shots are going in at a decently high level, 42% from three, 47 overall, but he's providing a good amount of threes, a good amount of steals. He's getting you points, and he is clearly the option there, that bench scoring type of guy, pairing alongside the defense of John Isaac in that bench unit, and Ross is a relatively consistent source of points and threes and steals, and is valuable enough to be a 12-team league player, creeping inside the top 100 over the last 2 weeks, ahead of guys like Jamal Murray, De'Aaron Fox, Dennis Smith, Serge Ibaka, Steve Adams. He's ahead of all of those guys in terms of rankings over the last 2 weeks. Let's talk a couple of hyphens now. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson of the Brooklyn Nets. The numbers haven't been fantastic for Rondae, averaging 11.5 and 7, but I think his performances, or the fact that he's now in the starting lineup, it makes him an option. Now, I don't have high hopes for Rondé. I don't think that he's a must-roster player. He's available in 43% of Yahoo leagues, but I think he's a guy that you've got to consider having a look at and adding, but I wouldn't be saying he's a must-roster guy. He's going to be this top 100, top 80 guy. I don't think he's going to be that much improved, although his defensive numbers are down at the moment, 0.6 steals, 0.3 blocks over the past 7 games, so there's some significant room for improvement in those areas, but I do think that he is absolutely worth paying attention to and grabbing. Not as much as this bloke, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a must-roster player, only 57% rostered in Yahoo leagues. That means that he is available in tons of leagues. Please go and add him, the 76th ranked player over the last 2 weeks in under 30 minutes, averaging 14, 4, and 3.5 with a block, with 1.5 steals, and again, not outrageous shooting, 48, 76, and 33. No reason he can't keep that up. No reason he can't bump his assists up. He looks to be the best guard on this team, not including Lou Williams, although Williams has struggled a little bit lately. He's better than Avery Bradley. He's better than Patrick Beverley. He's better than Miloš Teodosic, Ty Wallace, all those guys. Shai is the guy, and the Clippers are on a run with him starting. He's not moving. He's not losing minutes, and he's only going to get better. He is a must-roster player, and he is available in tons of leagues. probably tons of leagues that you're actually in. For deeper leagues, someone requested I do a few deeper league guys to pay attention to. Reggie Bullock is rostered in only 11% of Yahoo leagues, yet is a top 120 player. I don't think he's a 12-team league guy, but in 14-teamers, he needs to be rostered. He could be available in a lot of those formats. So go and have a look to see if Reggie Bullock is there. He's going to give you threes. He's not going to give you too much else, although he's had a couple of games where the steals have spiked and where the assists have spiked. So that's worth paying attention to. And the other guy to look at is Nerlens Noel, who is going to be that defensive stat guy. He's shooting 78% over his last five games as well with 0.8 steals and one block in only 13 minutes. He's not going to be a fantastic option, but I think he can be. I think he's got a chance to finish the season as a top 130 player. In fact, he's already a top 150 guy already this season, averaging a steal and 1.3 blocks. And he is rostered in only 9% of Yahoo leagues, so he's available in many, many different spots. And as a guy who's already a top 150 player, that means in any 14-team league, anything deeper, Nerlens Noel should be on a roster, and he's around in plenty of those leagues. So there's some waiver wire guys to have a look at for this coming week and for the rest of the season. I hope you guys enjoyed the segment. Let's talk some DFS now. On DraftKings, the perfect lineup was Lillard, Lou Williams, Mo Harkless, the pencil Harrison Barnes, Hassan Whiteside, DeMar DeRozan, the chief Al-Farouq Aminu, and DeAndre Jordan for a total of 379 points, and that cost the full $50,000. While on FanDuel, that lineup was Benny Simmons and Dame Lillard, Dwayne Wade and DeMar DeRozan, the pencil Harrison Barnes and Mo Harkless, Kelly Olynyk, the chief Al-Farouq Aminu, and Hassan Whiteside for a total of 399.6, and that cost $59,400. Let's get into these games now. We're going to be looking at this more from a FanDuel perspective on today's show. The first game that we look at is not the one that I've got up on the board because it's the wrong graphic. So I'll get that fixed for you in just a second. All right, we're back in business now. Fix that up. It's the first game of the day is the Oklahoma City Thunder traveling to take on the Detroit Pistons. The Thunder are favored by 1 point and the total is 220. The Pistons coming off a victory over the Golden State Warriors. They're really surging at the moment, putting together a nice little run of performances. At point guard, Russell Westbrook, 11,400. He has annihilated Detroit in the past, averaging over 60 the last three contests here. I really do like him, that 11,400 price tag, although the Pistons have been quite good at limiting opposition point guard production. Then you got Reggie Jackson up against his former team. He's been giving you about 29 a night, 6,100. It's not a bad investment. He's averaged 27 the times that he's played against his former team. Of course, some of that has been battling injuries. I don't mind him here. I think he's a decent floor player as well. Not really that keen on Ish Smith in this one. Dennis Schroeder's at 5,800, putting up some decent numbers himself at the moment. We do have still up and down in terms of his playing time, which is something to pay attention to. Terry Ferguson is out, but we could see MC Hamadou Diallo return. He is questionable for this game, which might have an impact on what Schroeder can do. I think he's more of a GPP guy at that $5,800 price point. Bullock's at $4,600. Hey, has done well against Oklahoma City for whatever reason. I'm not buying that as something to fully invest in, though. Alex Abrines had 25 points last game. He's a minimum salary player. If Diallo is ruled out, I think that's a worthy tournament option. For the small forwards, Paulie George is at 8,600. The production has dipped, understandably, with Westbrook back. He's averaging under 40 points his last three games, only 34 last game. At 8,600, I think that's maybe just a little bit too high for George, while Stan Johnson's putting up big numbers, 28-point average over the last three. He's quite up and down, but I think he's a very strong tournament play with how improved he has been. Blakey Griffin's at 9,200. I think that's strong from Griffin. He's around a 40-point guy most of the time. That's a pretty good price over there on FanDuel. 5,500 for Jeremy Grant. Struggled last game is significantly, only 12 points in that performance. But I think the 5,500 for Jeremy is not a bad floor sort of a price. And then the centers is where we really get into it. Andre Drummond at 10,000. Steven Adams at 73. I will take Adams over Drummond. I'll save that $3,000. Drummond has struggled with Adams in the past. Adams has struggled a little bit with Drummond, but not to the same degree. And at 7,300, I'd rather struggle just that little bit and save myself almost $3,000. Nerlens Noel at 4,000. Big game in the last game from Nerlens. I wouldn't be really counting on that to be a regular occurrence or anything along those lines. Let's have a look at the games over on DraftKings. I like Griffo over there at 88. I think Adams at 6,400 is a pretty good price. And I do really like Stan Johnson at 3,700. There's quite a lot to like with him over on DraftKings for this matchup. The next game we look at, the Golden State Warriors and the Atlanta Hawks. The Warriors are favored by 10.5 and the total is 232. Draymond Green is out likely for the next 2 to 3 games as well. The Warriors will be looking to get back on track after losing that game against the Pistons. We know the Hawks have their struggles. Jeremy Lin and The Undertaker Dwayne Dedman are both probable for this game after missing the last couple. Lin at 4,700 is a 30-point tournament upside guy. It's not super sexy. And Trae Young at 7,200. I think that's probably just a little bit too high for Young. He had 30 in the first meeting between these two teams, which isn't still quite enough. At 7,200. Steph at 9,700. I think at a sub 10,000 price tag, Curry is worth looking at. He had 37 in 37 minutes in his first game back against Detroit. I think he's worth looking at that price. I'd rather Westbrook and spend that extra 2,000 and save the money by taking Adams over Drummond. But Curry's not a completely terrible play. Shooting guard, you got Kevin Huerta at 4,200. Really a strong tournament play, but that's really about it. While Klay Thompson at 7,000. I think with the return of Curry, I'll end up fading Thompson here. Bazemore at 5,400. Production's still been coming for Bays off the bench. At 5,400, it's not a terrible price tag. He had 29 in the last game, has done well against Golden State. I think there's some floor value in Bazemore at this point. And then at small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. 5,600 for Princey. I love that price for him. It's getting low. Now, his production hasn't been great, but he's still getting 25 to 26 a night, even on poor nights. And at 5,600, it's really hard to go past that sort of value. I don't really see much in Bembry, while Kevin Durant at 11,000. First game with Steph back, he had 50. That's nothing to sneeze at. Not sure it's an $11,000 player. I think it's fine to consider him, but he wouldn't be a priority player. At power forward, Yunus Jarepko, 3,800 for Yunus. He played okay in one of the last games, but the game against the Pistons, he struggled a little bit. I don't really feel too excited about using him. While the Baptist, John Collins, at 7,100, I do really like him. Some reason I forgot to mention earlier on, Damian Jones has got a torn pectoral muscle and he's going to be out for basically the rest of the season. So that's going to open up some of these things in the Golden State front court. I don't know how that skipped my mind. Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell are the two interesting guys here. Bell is a minimum salary player at $3,500. He can easily get you 20 to 25, while Looney at 3,800, you can also get you around that 20. Now, I'd rather Bell for his upside in GPPs and Looney as a strong cash sort of a player. You got The Undertaker or Alex Len for the Hawks. 5,000 for Dedman and 38 for Len. I don't really see the appeal in either of those guys. On DraftKings, I love Prince. He's at 4,800. That is a super strong play, as is John Collins at 53. I'd almost lock those guys in cash. It's so good. While Trae Young at 6,000 looks super appealing there. Jordy Bell at 34 and Curry at 95, putting up some nice value, as is Bazemore at 4,600 over on DraftKings. The next game we look at, the Denver Nuggets and the Toronto Raptors. No spread or total at the moment because Kyle Lowry is questionable. He missed that last game. That pushed Freddie VanVleet's minutes over 30 in that last one. So if Lowry misses, we're looking at more value for Dan Green, the fun guy Kawhi Leonard, and for Freddie VanVleet. That'd be some names to pay attention to. For the Nuggets, Jamal Murray at 7,000. The Blue Arrow not really living up to that number. He's a fade. Kyle Lowry at 81 with a sore back is also a fade. While VanVleet at 49. We'd be really, really big on VanVleet if Lowry happens to play, but we just don't know that at this point. Monty Morris at 4,300, Dan Green at 47. I'd love Green if Lowry happens to be out, but we just don't know that at this spot. But he's an interesting tournament guy. He's really hard to rely upon in cash on most nights. And then you go to the small forwards. You've got Gaz Harris at 6,400. No idea why he's listed as a small forward over on FanDuel. 6,400 for Gazza. Nice, Gary! I think that might be bordering on being too high for Harris with how he's producing. He can be a 40-point guy, 35-point guy. I'm rethinking that. I think he does have some cash value at that 6,400. Juancho Hernangómez is giving you 25 a night. Somehow, don't ask me how he is doing it, but he's consistently doing it at the moment. So Juancho, he has to be in play here. I think with the way he's playing, at 27 average over the last three is definitely something that's worth paying attention to. The fun guy, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
10,400 for Leonard. He's averaging 51 over the last five. A really solid floor type of a player at that price. Very hard to go past. I like Serge Ibaka quite a bit here, 6,000. I think he'll play 30-plus minutes. His numbers have dipped, only 25 over the last five, but I think a bit of a bounce back could be coming here for Ibaka. Well, Pascal Siakam at 6,800. That's too high, in my opinion, for Siakam, whose peripheral numbers have dipped a little bit. Paulie Millsap also putting up big numbers, but his salary is now at 7,200. His recent numbers would suggest he can beat that, averaging 40 over the last five. I'm not totally sold on him, especially against this Raptors team with their defensive prowess. I like Nikola Jokic at 8,500.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
He averages 49 against the Raptors the last three times, and that salary is just too low in my opinion, so I'm happy to get on to him here. While Valanciunas at 4,800, I don't think that would be all that much of a worthwhile investment. On DraftKings, Ibaka, Gaz Harris, Jokic, and Kawhi are all pretty strong cash options. The Blue Arrow at 6,400, maybe, but I'm not super into that. While 4,400 for Wancho is looking pretty nice given the way that he is currently going. The Washington Wizards and the New York Knicks. The Wizards are favored by one, and the Knicks, and the total is 228. Otto Porter is listed as out with that with a toe injury. So last game we had Thomas Satoransky start in Kelly Oubre's place. We had Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
We had him start over Porter a couple of days ago when Porter was out due to a personal issue. So some fluidity, I guess, in this Wizards lineup. But if Porter is out again, more minutes for Oubre, more for Satoransky, more for Jeff Green, and some value to go around in those spots. As for the Knicks, I've got literally no idea what's going to happen. Is it going to be Dotson or Trier? Are we going to have Moutier play big? Now, one thing I do know is Trey Burke is out. Will Frank Ntilikina get back into the rotation, or they banished him now? I don't know. Will it be Moutier and Trier handling the point guard role? There's so many unknowns. Will Vonleh get into foul trouble? I've got no idea. At point guard, Thomas Satoransky, 3,800. I feel pretty good about Satoransky getting you to about 20 points in this game as a starting small forward. I really, really like this with Porter out. While Manny Moutier at 5,000. That's a significant price jump from him. He did get really hot against the Bucks and drop 42 points. That sort of shooting's unsustainable. And look over his game logs. You'll see some strong performances, some real turds, and then some good ones again. It's hard to know. He is a tournament player. Well, Johnny Wall at 9,500. I love the matchup here for John. This should be a 40-plus point performance, probably 50. Upside on John, and that makes him a strong option. Damo Dotson's at 42. Will he play? I say that only partially in jest because he was literally out of the rotation before the last three games in which he's averaged 29 points in 27 minutes. At 4,200, he's nice to have a look at, but last game especially, he was on like 70% shooting, which is not going to stick and didn't do anything in those other categories. So there is an element of risk, but at 4,200, that risk is relatively minimized. Timmy Hardaway's at 73, and I think he is a rock-solid option, while Beal at 8,100 has been definitely underperforming, averaging only 32 points over the last three. 8,100 might be a little bit too high, and the 3,900 for Alonzo Trier, I think that's worth looking at for Trier. He can give you 20 pretty comfortably, and I think that's a relatively strong cash option. Oubre's at 43. He is inconsistent and bad, but 4,300 is pretty tough to go past. That's a significant salary drop, while Jeff Green's at 4,100. I wouldn't want to roster Oubre, Satoransky, and Green all in one lineup because they're just as likely to shit the bed as the others. But having a combination of those guys, one of those three, two of those three in a tournament, given the opportunity that's potentially arising for them, I think that would be a worthwhile thing to do. And then we look at Mario Hezonja, who... That's enough out of him. Power forwards, Noah Vonleh, 5,500. Will he get the minutes? Will he get the stats? Your guess is as good as mine. I'm not sure his upside is high enough to rely upon him, and I know his floor's too low for cash. Well, Kevin the Fort Knox, 4,400 for the Fort. He had 41 points last game after being just non-existent really prior to that. Again, another example of who knows what David Fizdale is doing. 41 for Knox here, that would make him a GPP guy, but if you're chasing it, it's just as likely to blow up in your face as it is to succeed. While Markieff Morris, he's now a $6,600 player. I think he's probably a little bit overpriced at that sort of a salary. Enes Kanter is at 7,400, hasn't been getting to that level of late, but I don't mind this matchup for him against Thomas Bryant and Markieff Morris, while Bryant at 36 hasn't really done enough for us to suggest we should be that interested. On DraftKings, Satoransky, Oubre, Green, and Hardaway all come out strong, as does Damo Dotson and Moutier. At 5,000, probably not as good as he is on FanDuel, but the 4,000 for Kevin Knox is a little bit more palatable. The next game we look at, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are favored by 6, and the total is 212. Big men we know go off against Cleveland. David Nwaba, Sam Decker are both out. George Hill did return to action for the Cavs earlier on, over the weekend. Actually, he was back in action. Had some good performances earlier in the season, but a little bit hard to know exactly what the Cavs are going to do. They did start Hill alongside the Padawan Colin Sexton. Sexton's at 5,500. He had just 12 points in that game with Hill back. Only played 28 minutes. So I guess that's a concern. Maybe more tournaments for him. While Spencer Dinwiddie's at 6,300. He's been playing well, but the DFS production hasn't quite been there, averaging only under 28 over the last five and under 23 over his last three. It'd be more a tournament play I'd want to look at. I don't really care for George Hill or Shabazz Napier. D'Angelo Russell at 7,800 didn't really play well last game, but this is a great opportunity for Russell. That price is just a bit too high, though. I don't completely hate it, and I think he's got a place in a tournament. I love the matchup. I just think that price is a bit too high. The Blue Swimmer, Alec Burks, Jordy Clarkson. I think Clarko at 5,500 is not a bad floor play. Burks, he's at 4,000. He's giving you about 21 or so a game. Not bad for cash. Not sure his upside's really, really there, though. We don't know the status of Jumpin' Joe Harris either at 4,500. If he is out, it boosts Crabbe, it boosts Dinwiddie, and it boosts Amari Carroll. For the small forwards, Rocket Rodney Hood's at 5,100. He's always just a tournament guy. Well, Chetty Osman is basically in that same boat as a $5,000 guy, just an upside tournament player. And the big man, Larry Nance Jr. at 5,300. Until further notice, we can't rely upon Nance. He's back on the bench, while Hollis Jefferson at 6,000 is too expensive. And then the centers. I do like Tristan Thompson here. Big men against the Nets have got a significant boost this season. He's at 6,700. He's playing an absolute shit ton of minutes. He had 48 points last game. Another 40-point performance from Tomo here against the Nets shouldn't be too outrageous. While Jarrett Allen at 6,300, I'd spend that extra 400 on Tristan Thompson. And this is a crazy thing to say. I would spend more on Tristan Thompson than Jarrett Allen and feel good about it. And I never thought I'd be saying that sentence at the beginning of the season. On DraftKings, Thompson again, 6,500 is in play here. The Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabbe's a GPP guy, and same is Rocket Rodney Hood at 4,300, while a lot of the other guys are a little bit overpriced on DraftKings as well, especially D'Angelo Russell at 7,700. The next game we take a look at is the Clippers and the Pelicans. Both of these teams are coming off a back-to-back. The Pelicans are favored by two, and the total is 237.5. points here. Etuan Moore is questionable with that leg injury that he suffered over the weekend. If he is out, that gives more minutes to Solomon Hill and Wesley Johnson. Timmy Frazier's at 5,200. I just don't think he does enough to be priced that high, so that I'd leave that alone. While Shai Gilgeous-Alexander struggled in today's game, $6,000 for him is probably putting him out of cash consideration. I wouldn't want Pat Beverley either. I love Drew Holiday at 9,200. He's just getting it done night after night. Yeah, real good consistency. Well, I think at 4,100, you have to look at Avery Bradley. Two strong games in a row. I wouldn't be locking him into cash, but I think there is some tournament upside there. Well, Lou Williams, with his ups and downs, is only a GPP guy with some a strong performance today. Etuan Moore at 46, that's a strong fade. Well, Mirotic at 8,000. I actually like Mirotic here at 8,000. Don't know why he's consistently listed as a small forward when he hasn't played that position ever. But he is a small forward at 8,000. There's value in him, I believe, at that price. While the Rooster at 73, I really like Gallinari at 7,300 too. For your power forwards, Tone Davis is at 12,7. Really hard to go past what Davis does. So he's always in your cash consideration, I believe. Although, you know, if you've got a weak stomach, maybe you want to go past him in case the locker room issues come to the fore. Toby Harris at 81 and the table Montrezl Harrell 83. I'm more into Harris at 81 than Harrell at 83. It just feels a little bit too high for the table at that sort of a salary. And then at center, Julius Randle 71. Struggled with his foul trouble today. I think that might be marginally too high for Julius at 7,100. His minutes do seem to get a bit of a cap when everyone's healthy, so I'd probably end up fading both he and, of course, Marcin Gortat. On DraftKings, Mirotić, Davis, and Holiday all in strong spots. The 6,700 for Randall's okay, and 47 for Timmy Frazier, probably in a better spot, while 6,600 for the Rooster Danilo Gallinari is not a bad option either. The last game of the night, the Houston Rockets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. I've got that on that graphic there on back-to-backs. They're not. The Rockets are favored by 1.5. The total is 220.5. Let's look at the point guards here. You've got Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
He's at 6,900.
Giggity.
Yeah, that's too much for Teague. Well, Chris Paul at 8,200. With Paul playing, I feel good about getting him in there. He's around 40 a night, so that's a pretty strong price. Well, Derrick Rose at 6,100, shooting the absolute lights out at the moment. It's not really translating to great DFS performances, and if the shot falls off, then he won't make value. So I'm not really keen on Rose at that sort of a salary. Andy Wiggins at 5,900 has been atrocious, but that would make him a low-rostered tournament option in case the shot falls. He's hitting about 28% of his shots, and that's going to increase at some point. Well, Jimmy Harden at 11,500, just as rock solid as they come, happy to use him. Eric Gordon at 55 is always a fade to me at that sort of a price when both Paul and Harden are playing. At small forward, Jimmy Ennis at 39, tournaments only, but even then not strong. While Bob Cove is up to 7,300. He's destroying that price, but is that a little bit too high? I'm not sure it is. I think there is still some value in Covington at that price, given how many minutes and how well he's playing. Taj Gibson and Dario Saric, I think we can fade both of those guys pretty aggressively. And at center, I love Towns at 9,400. He's averaged 50 the last three times against the Rockets. Good price for him. While Capella at 8,700. Capella outplayed Towns in the playoffs, no doubt about that, but he just doesn't get the same level of DFS points. So I think that Capella is someone I'd probably lean away from. On DraftKings, I love Jeff Teague at 56, good price. Towns is also pretty strong. The same story for Wigo at 55 and Jimmy Harden at 11-1. Pretty bloody tough to go past him at that sort of a price tag. Let's go through some studs and value plays. On DraftKings, I like Jokic at 8,200, and my value play is the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince at 48. On FanDuel, my stud is Townsie at 94, and the value is Oubre at 43. On Yahoo, Townsie 41, and the value is Satoransky as a minimum. And on DraftStars, my value play is Tone Davis, 21,270, and the value is Satoransky at marginally above minimum, 5,240. Guys, go and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And support today's sponsor, Pure Tanica. Use the promo code BASKETBALL for free US shipping on the great shampoo and conditioner they have over there. Follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Instagram and on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jimmer Fredette.